Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Third Stream View here on BBSRadio.com for Monday, December 27th, 2010, which is almost over. Where is the time gone? Well, I hope everybody had a good Christmas. I did. I hope you all have a good New Year, which is coming up soon. I'm your host, PK, and I'll be with you for the next hour. And you can also get in touch with me at my email, which is pkbbs2@gmail.com. As always, I think like to thank my friend Don Nikoloff for helping me to produce my show and for his advice. And he's also the man with Evident Footprints, which is another real good show on this network. Again, this is Third Stream View is my terminology for sort of like the libertarian point of view. The whenever there's talking heads or, for example, talk radio or the, regular news, the status quo opinion cartel, there's always the left-right paradigm, which is actually just the one government party with two heads or the one bird of prey with two wings. But I represent the third stream view, the view that you don't get to hear because it's excluded. It's pushed away by the opinion cartel of the status quo. So here you will get the third stream view and my take on things, which is mainly the libertarian take on things, mixed with the greatness and the accuracy of Austrian economics and the ethics of liberty. So the last few shows, I've still been talking about my view for correcting things in Washington and for our country. And in a nutshell, my view is all about secession. And I have written my own secession solution, which is like a new constitution to help us get there and have clearly defined rules of how the economy works and how the social aspects of the economy work. So this is what I've been focusing on. And I've covered several topics like taxes, economics, education, healthcare. I think I'm back. This week I am. I spoke about foreign policy. I will continue now with in terms of how to get from A to B in the secession that I advocate, which would mean that going back to what Thomas Jefferson said, that he could foresee that the U.S. would eventually probably break off into several republics, and he wished them well. So in that spirit, that's where I'm coming from. And it's not about advocating war or racism. It's about newly seceded republics or states will self-govern, and they will respect and protect individual rights, which the framework for individual rights, of course, would be liberty, property, and peace. And heavily armed populace and a foreign policy that is all about armed neutrality and free trade with goodwill to all nations. So I've gotten this far in the last few weeks. I'm going to mention NASA, the space program, NASA. Oh, no, not another socialist administration. There's nothing in the Constitution that calls for the federal government to conduct a space program. I'm not against a space program or space research, but not at the expense of the taxpayer. It should be done totally through the private sector. And then when they invent new things or take us to outer space, we as consumers, if we choose to, we will pay for a space program or what it has to offer. But now it's just another example of corporate welfare, state capitalism, corporate socialism. I would advocate that NASA be sold to investors who are foreign and domestic, and the Air Force could deal with the strategic part of things. And we'll cut the taxpayers loose because, you know, all these scientists and their dreams about outer space, well, their dreams, they don't tell us this, but their dreams demand that we taxpayers pay for their dreams. Well, I say, as I just mentioned, they can get to their dreams through the private sector if investors will fund the things that they want. I'm not saying we haven't learned things from space research and all this, but, you know, Henry Ford, Andrew Carnegie, Bill Gates, they were not standing in line with a hat in their hand for a tax subsidy. And, of course, again, the way to get to these a more efficient, thriving private sector is through micro-taxes. Taxes greatly cut back and regulations greatly cut back. My main concern about cutting regulations is pollution. And pollution should be handled through tort law and private property rights. So as far as NASA goes, in newly seceded republics or states where there are NASA facilities, I say that these facilities will not be disturbed, but they will no longer be funded by seceding states or entities or republics. No tax-funded space program, and especially no government interference with private sector space exploration. So if private investors, be they foreign and domestic, they want to launch a rocket from the desert or anywhere that's, you know, fairly safe as far as, you know, the citizenry goes, and they have, you know, insurance, we welcome them to the marketplace to bring on their ideas, innovations, and their technologies. That's the way to do things, and it will work for space just like it worked for the auto industry. Now, there's another character that's not in the Constitution to fund. We can thank Nixon for a lot of this, I believe, is Amtrak. Amtrak is those federal trains that run through our states. Well, in my view, the Amtrak trains may run undisturbed through our states or republics or territories, the newly seceded territories. They will run undisturbed. We will pay to ride them, the Amtrak trains, but we will send no taxes to Washington to subsidize Amtrak. So once again, it's got to meet the test of the marketplace. And as much as I truly love Europe, except for its high taxes and socialist, a lot of socialism, which seems like America's headed towards or more of, as much as I love Europe, America, except probably for the Northeast, is not really a train type of country. It what works for Europe, not necessarily here. There's countries are smaller, big populations tighter together. I've ridden the trains over in Europe. I thought they ran quite well, even though a lot of them are government owned. But that's their problem, not ours. So you know, I don't buy into this this big train situation in commuter trains for America. A lot of them run at a loss, and they need to be bailed out by taxpayers. If they can't run on their own through their user fees, then, you know, in a real free market, they wouldn't exist unless people want to just pay exorbitant prices or people want to donate more and bail them out of their own private funds. That's fine. But anyway, so that's how I see Amtrak. No more taxes to Washington to subsidize Amtrak. Okay, I'm moving on to the environment. And, of course, a lot of my solutions, they're sort of short and concise, and they're not the be-all, end-all, and there would be subcategories, I'm sure. But mine is a rough overview given to you by a free market economist. This was my take on things. So you have the free market view as it relates to the topics I'm speaking about, which is right now is the environment. Now, pollution is essentially a scientific problem requiring numerous diverse technologies, innovations, inventions, ideas, and improvements of existing technologies. There should be strict liability applied to polluters through tort law and property rights. And the government will give no protection of special interest group polluters. That's got to go. People who pollute have to pay damages and or cease their pollution and, address the problem, mostly scientifically or through technology. No government-enforced limits on polluters' liability. And equally important, and is similar to my view on NASA, my last point on the environment, is that there is no harassment or persecution of alternative pollution technology and environmental protection technology. Once again, I advocate a free market for businessmen and entrepreneurs who want to use their brains and ideas to bring us more pollution control devices or ways to address pollution and to protect the environment. Now, eminent domain. This is a problem that's been abused a lot, especially recently, I think in the Northeast, where these developers have actually got the state or city governments or county governments to condemn or take property from the rightful owners and give it to developers. What, so the city governments or the locals can get more tax revenue out of properties that have nothing to do with right-of-ways, as in roads, bridges, power lines, utilities, and railroad tracks? That is my narrow view of eminent domain. Would apply mainly to roads, bridges, power lines, utilities, and railroad tracks. Therefore, ladies and gentlemen, private property must never be taken from its rightful owners and given unethically to other private owners and or private developers, regardless of the compensation. And this has been abused, and this must stop, because property owners, they're capitalists too. They own private property, and they should be able to use it as they choose or give it to who they choose, but not have it taken from them regardless of compensation when it doesn't apply to the main narrow conditions I already described: roads, bridges, power lines, utilities, and railroad tracks. Okay. Moving on to immigration. I contend that English would be the official language of the country. All government documents and all road signage are written in English. Now, U.S. citizens from states that have not seceded may come and go in the states who have seceded. They may come to our states. They may come and go as they please. They may work. They can own property. They can reside, and they can invest without government harassment. So just because we secede, let's say – what I'm getting to, the original southern states seceded. That would mean people from other states, California, North Dakota, anybody could visit, anybody could move and work here. They would not be excluded just because we seceded. They're our fellow Americans, they can come and go, but we have different rules, different laws, different taxes. We probably end up having a lot more people move here, and other states or territories would change their tune to attract people back. So again, all citizens from states that have not seceded may come and go. They can work, own property, reside, and invest without government harassment. Now, all immigrants must pass through a legal immigration process. And an effective guest worker program must be established. And who knows, if we need these guest workers, especially in agriculture or whatnot, they could maybe even get a fast track to citizenship. But anyway, there'll be an effective guest worker program. And since there will not be a centralized government welfare state, illegal immigrants cannot receive free health care or free education, and there are no more anchor babies. So let's say, several neighboring states, say four or five neighboring states seceded. Well, each state has its own capital, but all the capitals wouldn't have one huge central capital. If there was a central capital, it would be very small with strictly limited constitutional duties and a constitution that would have teeth and it would be enforced. Unlike today's, which the liberals seem to think is a living, flexible document. And the so-called conservatives and neoconservatives think that it's what's written is sort of firm, and it means what it says, and it says what it means, unless conservatives need it or don't need it to suit their aims. So I'm talking about an objective, very strictly limited constitution that has a lot of teeth, and it doesn't allow wiggle room for government to get weasel its way out. Now, if local governments or even local state governments want to have a small welfare system to aid people, and people want to donate to it, or microtaxes contribute to some of it, that's okay. That's not a huge, massive welfare state like Walter Williams, economist Walter Williams, African-American economist Walter Williams mentions the poverty pentagon, which there's something like, I don't know, is it 2 million social workers or something like that? They're all involved in this, the welfare system. So they, of course, will be complaining when things change. They will want their jobs. But most of these people have college degrees, and they'll be able to be absorbed in the private the new private sector. Now, there'll be some short-term pain and unemployment and this and that as things are restructured, but the long-term gain will be much better and much quicker, unlike what Obama's doing, nibbling around the edges, trying to raise taxes during an economic downturn, bailing out companies. You know, in my world, there's no bailouts because companies don't need to be bailed out because they're not heavily taxed in the first place. And I am not pro-business per se. I am pro-free enterprise. And there's a big difference because pro-free enterprise means, again, no corporate welfare, no subsidies, no protectionism, no politically connected business. The central theme of my secession solution falls back on liberty for all, special privileges for none. So if GM or somebody folds or has serious financial woes, they can go bankrupt. They can reorganize. But they'll organize in an atmosphere of micro-taxes and micro-regulations so they won't be so heavily taxed in the first place. Okay, so getting there. In my world, to get to secession, I recommend to more easily achieve our newly seceded nation or nation states or republics, I recommend that the original 11 southern states who first seceded should lead the way through nullification followed by a peaceful secession based on our new constitution's principles, rules, and conditions as I've been speaking about during the last few shows. Now, other issues and problems should always be addressed with a pro-market, pro-individual rights, limited government methodology. So just because something needs fixing or improving doesn't mean the government has to do it, because that means you hire more bureaucrats, more rules and regulations, and more government employees, and then you end up with another more bureaucracies, more red tape, and more of a drag on the economy and a market way of fixing things. Now, change is the only constant. Since change is the only constant, our new nation or our new republics or newly seceded states, with their true free market economies and their sound monetary systems, they will now be more readily adaptable to technology, new technologies, innovations, foreign trade, and foreign competition. This would mean that these new republics or new states, newly seceded, they would be on the competitive cutting edge with no government interference in the market system and the monetary system. Again, liberty for all and special privileges for none. So, ladies and gentlemen, I say unto you, secession is good, secession is right, secession works. And some of the states who would be best for this are our coastal states, especially California, Texas, Florida, Louisiana, Mississippi, Georgia, Alabama, North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, those areas. And there's going to be a lot of pushback against this. A lot of people aren't going to want this. They're going to worry about, you know, woe is me, what's happening? But in the long run, they'll be much better off, and they'll have to get the federal government's tentacles out of things. Again, for Social Security, we would ask that people in the seceding states, the federal government pays them a lump sum or sells off a lot of government property to fund, say, a lump sum to buy these people out or have annuities, and then the new, you know, the young people are cut free. The other people are cut free of Social Security. So, yes, there'll be some difficult or intricate things to get from A to B, but it's certainly the way I've laid it out. We haven't thrown wrenches and gears into the marketplace. We haven't distorted the marketplace. We haven't advocated secession and more taxes. We haven't advocated war, which is very expensive and very damaging and very unnecessary, especially when you find out that so much of it is staged by the globalists of the day. Now, to those who would say that secession based upon the new Constitution's principles that I've been speaking about, to those who would say that secession is unworkable, well, I pose this hypothetical question to those who say it wouldn't work. If you did have the choice of remaining in the U.S. as it currently is, or you could live in this new constitutional republic, which I have described, which would you choose? And I think that most people, most Americans, if they woke up tomorrow morning and this was their choice, I think they would. I would hope that they would choose the new society that I have laid out. Because again, everything I speak of and everything I advocate, to the best that I can tell, does not advocate taking anybody's liberty or property or peace. I don't care to tax anyone any further. I want to detax people. I don't care to regulate people any further. I don't want a stupid, insane drug war. In my world, your gun rights are not threatened. Your property rights are not threatened. The only people who really have to worry are government bureaucrats and politicians. But they will have to be reformed too, because they will clearly not be able to get away with what they're getting away with. And as I spoke early on, an important entity that would be firmly enshrined in our Constitution would be fully informed juries. And kids would learn in school that they have the right to vote their conscience, and juries can nullify bad laws. They can alter bad laws, which was done during slavery days when some of the northern states, as like Wisconsin, they juries refused to convict runaway slaves or those who helped them, and they just nullified the law. And also during Prohibition, there was jury nullification, which meant that juries wouldn't convict people who were caught with possession of alcohol or trafficking in alcohol. You know, today people go to the store, they buy a six-pack or a bottle of wine, you know, bring it home, enjoy it with their family or friends. You know, if this was 1925, Elliot Ness could break into your home, smash all your liquor, and take you to jail. So we don't need this stuff. And the federal government is the main problem in a lot of this. And a lot of state governments do oppressive things too in local governments. So they have to be on notice that the citizenry is not going to put up with this. And this is why, when it's clearly written in a constitution that everybody knows what it means, well, they'll be armed with this knowledge. It should be taught, and they will keep the government on a very short leash. Now, I know this conflicts with some of my Austrian heroes and mentors who are more of the anarchy capitalists, but I'm one of those who I'm still into the strictly limited government sort of thing, and I'm sure that even my Austrian school economist friends and mentors would certainly applaud where I'm coming from, and they would certainly step into this society. When you look at the federal government now, it's very afraid and concerned about the WikiLeaks, and sadly enough, as I understand it, Private Bradley Manning is being tortured down there in Guantanamo, you know, the place that Obama was going to close. He's a young fellow that apparently released a lot of this so-called sensitive government information and whatnot, which Julian Assange claims that he was not connected with. But be that as it may, it's a shame that they're treating this recruit this way, because I think he did the right thing. And I'm not anti-American, anti-military. I'm anti-U.S. foreign policy and using the military as an instrument of the federal government's globalist empire with its 700 military bases in over 130 foreign countries, which is bankrupting our country. And I say to all the neocons out there and all of those who happen to disagree with me on foreign policy, I ask you to please show me in the current federal constitution where – please show me exactly where it says that America is supposed to have a global empire with 700 military bases in over 130 foreign countries. I'd like to know where you get this a constitutional authority – this American greatness that that despicable William Crystal talks about in a lot of his neocon rants. American exceptionalism. I have a problem with that term because I'm proud and thankful to be an American, but I reject this American exceptionalism nonsense, as if America has a monopoly on hard work and education, as if everybody from a foreign country is poor and uneducated. Ladies and gentlemen, America does not have a monopoly on hard work or education or innovation. Does America have the highest math scores? Do we have the most engineers? Do we have the highest scores in science? Do we make the best electronics? Do we make the best cars? Do we have the most honest politicians? Do we have the lowest unemployment? Do we have the lowest government debt? So knowing all these things that the federal government has caused this mess and try to make us think that we're better than everybody else, you know, I can't go there, especially the way the economy is, the way the banking system is, the way the schools are, the foreign policy. You know, I'm not going to go that route. And, I won't be bullied or intimidated by the neoconservatives and the crap that they try to lay out, because I never confuse loyalty to the government with patriotism. I never confuse my patriotism with loyalty to the government. My patriotism, again, is for the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, and the U.S. Constitution. Yes, it has some flaws, which I would like to revamp, but I don't back down from foreign policy discussions. And I'm amused how many veterans I've had discussions with who are pretty much in agreement where I'm coming from. And I applaud the veterans against the Iraq war. I mean, once they see the veil pulled away and they see what's going on, then they see that they're, in a futile struggle for a globalist empire, which serves mainly the grossly out of control military-industrial complex. It's massively huge when we're spending more on defense than, most of the combined military budgets of most of the major countries in the world. This is sucking valuable investment capital away from other capitalist enterprises. I'm for defense as listed in the Constitution, but nothing of the globalist scale we have now, which is just to further the aims of the military-industrial complex. And, of course, Israel, which is the 800-pound gorilla in the room that nobody cares to talk about, but PK will. I've now laid out my ideals for a new republic with a strictly limited government, because things need to change, and I don't see it happening now. Remarkably, I guess Obama backed down on this tax thing, and he's going to cooperate with the Republicans a bit, but it'll be interesting to see what happens when there are the Republicans assume power next month. I wonder if it'll turn into sort of what it did in the 94 when both houses became Republican, and until they need to spend, or they come up with their own emergencies or things they want to spend money on, they're for small government. They're for small government until Ron Paul speaks about what really needs to be done and cut away, whittled away, and then their backs are against the wall, because most of them are really big government Republicans, and they believe in the conservative welfare state as long as they're running it. And this has been going on for quite some time. So it needs to be addressed, and it needs to be changed without throwing anyone out in the street. Liberals or the opposition often like to say, we throw people in the street, or we don't care. We care very much. We care enough to want to change the system and not point a government gun at people's wallets, forcing them to pay for things that they don't want to pay for, nor should want to pay for. I guess a voluntary society runs contrary to most politicians and bureaucrats. However, as I understand it, with this nation of 300 plus million, there's only something like 3 million people who are controlling the rest of us. Politicians, bureaucrats, I don't know if I probably wouldn't count the military in that, although they wanted them at their beck and call. Police, bureaucrats, TSA, all these make work jobs for politicians and bureaucrats. Apparently there's like over 800,000 people now with security clearances for this huge security state that they're growing with their penitentiaries or these camps that are supposedly for illegal aliens, things like this. But I think that they're gearing up for a backlash or a revolt against the feds. There are these places, they do exist. They did intern the Japanese in 1942 without their consent. I think Roosevelt tried to say it was to protect them, but they should have had the choice. So it's already happened, and you see the militarization of the local police. They're getting more Pentagon weapons, high-tech stuff. They have technology where they can make people sick at rallies or where people are protesting against government policies. They can, as I understand it, there's technology that will make people feel ill. I saw some new technology, which I believe the police will have in the near future if they don't already. I saw this on 60 Minutes, I believe it was earlier this year or last year. The military has this device where they can aim it at people from, I don't know, a couple hundred feet away, and you get a terrible burn. It burns your skin enough that you have to back away. I don't think it really kills people. Maybe it could if it was set on high, but I've seen the demonstrations of it, and it's rather scary. And of course, as Obama continues the Bush policy of murdering what happens to be often quite innocent people with their CIA-directed drone attacks, these drones will now be used over American territory, of course, only to deal with the illegal aliens and, I guess, illegal drug dealers coming across the border. That's what the drones are for. But you can be damn sure that they'll find their ways into local police departments or local governments as they're hovering above people and their efforts to protect us. So the war on terror is the new Cold War. There's no uniformed enemy per se. So it's a good way to keep spending money on the military-industrial complex, to keep Israel funded, and to keep making Americans more into the sheeple that they are and get them ready for their police state. So, you know, we're free to obey is basically what it comes down to. Something like only an American would say in the same sentence, I'm an American, I'm free. No one can tell me what to do. But there should be a law against it. So there's that. The irony of things, and people are just—they continue to be willing just to put up with this stuff. That's the reason government hates WikiLeaks and these whistleblowers, which is tied to the internet. In the past, World War II, like Pearl Harbor or the battleship Maine, technology didn't quickly go across the world like it does now, because in 2 seconds, anybody in India or China or Europe can have access to film, the news, and the internet. So it's instant now. And it's helped pull the curtain back. It's helped the masses see more about what's going on with the government. Because, you know, it seemed like almost half the politicians and bureaucrats, half of them, their duty is to keep hiding things from we citizens or obscuring them or telling half lies. And speaking of half lines, there's a great line from Lawrence of Arabia I like, where the British politician tells Lawrence, he says, "People who tell lies merely hide the truth, but people who tell half lies have forgotten where they put it." So that's a lot what comes out of the media. Half lies, they obscure the facts, they distort the facts. And this is why they don't like the internet. The internet is a threat to them because it's pulled the veil back. And, of course, as I predicted, of course, anybody can make a prediction, but mine was that they're going to want to regulate the internet and even be able to shut it down or flip a switch. This is something that Zionist Joe Lieberman was pushing. Imagine Jewish people pushing something like this after what they've been through historically, especially during, the World War II days. Now, someone like that pushing this sort of thing, it's ridiculous. And as I suspected, they're going to use terrorism, or are using terrorism and child porn. That is their wedge. That is their main wedge to regulate the internet. That is what I believe is the direction they're going in to make this happen, because it's very convenient for them, especially terrorism. Everything is terrorism. Now Walmart's supposed to look out for terrorism. So, they were worried about, will the terrorists strike, will there be anything going on over Christmas? Well, not if they don't false flag us again. And that neocon, David Frum, another neocon I can't stand, is a former Canadian. He became an American only recently. He's one of these pro-Israel Zionist, pro-war types, wets his pants when he's confronted. What was I saying about this guy? Where was I? This is on I lost my train of thought. Are you out there, Don? Anyway.
Yes, I am there.
Sorry, I know you're... You're tired because you've been muted. Doing a lot. Yeah, sorry. This David Frum, I forgot where I was going on this, but he's another one that was very pro-war and only thinks we didn't do it right or spend enough or aggressively fight enough. But apparently they don't know history enough, especially in the Middle East and Afghanistan, which Afghanistan's never really had much of a central government. Those people are very tribal, and they've got all the time in the world. They will just wait and fight, retreat, fight, retreat, fight. They will hang in there. That is their style. They're not going to be ruled. It's very tough terrain. Uncle Sam ain't going to do any better probably than the British or the Russians. The Russians have tried to warn Uncle Sam, but apparently their catastrophe there didn't sink in. Maybe American exceptionalism thinks that it's going to make a big difference in Afghanistan, but I don't think so. Plus, opium production is at an all-time high. So, what a mess. Again, for Afghanistan, I would declare victory and leave. I know I'm jumping around on a lot of topics, but this is the way I sort of multitask or the way I do things. So many things are interconnected as far as our economy and where things are going. And as Ron Paul had said, this foreign policy cannot be maintained. This trillion-dollar foreign policy cannot be maintained. And with all this debt they're creating and all this inflation that they're creating which is on the horizon, which may not hit for a year or two, but Bernanke lies about they're not printing money. Well, they are creating money, whether they're doing it digitally or just printing more of it, but it's in the wings. And that's what I'm also worried about, is a possible hyperinflation. And again, prices don't all rise the same. They don't rise uniformly. So and businessmen and labor unions do not print money. Federal government's doing this, where it took over the banking system and monopolized it with its Federal Reserve, and it's owned by foreign banks, mostly Zionist Zionist Jew families, Jewish families, and agents of the Rothschilds. And of course, the here you have the Masonic Rockefeller wing. So that's what I see them and their minions, the Rockefeller wing with the Rothschild wing. And of course, the Soroses are mixed in there, and the Morgans are their, you know, their ancestors or their you know, people who are connected to them. That's how I see things. I've mentioned this before. The globalist aim, the globalist schemes. And of course, they would oppose practically everything that I have suggested for my peaceful secession. And both parties would oppose it because they keep intact the same foreign policy no matter who's in power. They keep the same interventionist foreign policy. They keep all the bases. They nibble around the edges, but really it's pretty much all the same. So therefore, again, just like Bush, Obama serves the big banks, Wall Street, the military-industrial complex, and the Israeli lobby. And the Israeli lobby, AIPAC, which is one of their main lobby groups, AIPAC, which stands for American Israeli Parasites Against the Constitution. The Israeli Zionists and their Mossad, they have infiltrated our government and our military, and a lot of this crowd are the architects of this sort of stuff. Richard Perle, Paul Wolfowitz, a lot of these people, Dennis Ross, they either have, and this is the question I'd like to ask all of them, do you have and or have you ever had dual Israeli-U.S. citizenship, and do you have a dual passport? Now, I know people from other countries do, but that doesn't stink to high heaven to me like dual U.S.-Israeli passports do. And I just remember what I was talking about David Frum. He's the fool that came up with Bush. It was Bush's speechwriter who came up with the axis of evil, Iraq, Iran, North Korea. Well, I would say that the axis of evil, the true axis of evil, is the U.S. federal government, the British government, and the Israeli government. Now, each one of those governments has their own spy organizations, and they work together. The CIA is in league with Britain's MI6, is in league with Israel's Mossad. They are the masters of deception. They are the masters of distorting the facts, the truth, hiding the truth. And together, they are behind, I believe, behind false flag attacks. They're behind this drug war. They're behind the increased opium production. You have Mossad agents littered through Afghanistan and Iraq. You have Israeli companies with Arab frontmen or European or Turkish frontmen with Israeli companies. And again, this all this military spending, they're getting their funds from the tax trough. Their funding does not come, most of it does not come from a competitive private sector. Their funding comes from government contracts. Well, gee, yeah, they're a bunch of private companies, but they're all sucking on the federal tit, and it's the taxpayer who is funding these companies. What I've learned is a lot of America's success in the past and with American businessmen, a lot of America business has succeeded in spite of all the government regulation and all the behind the scenes that special interest groups or politically connected businessmen have been up to, and the Federal Reserve. It's amazing that what is left of the market, or whatever there ever was of the free market or free enterprise system, it managed to hang in there in spite of all this government regulation. And a lot of government regulation in the past came from the special interest groups themselves, like even Republicans of the past, they staffed a lot of these regulatory agencies with their own people. So FCC, the ICC, these FTC, historically, industry put their own people in there so they could – they support regulation as long as they're the architect of it, and they know that it excludes – future competitors or, you know, current competitors. It makes it more difficult because the big companies and the established interests with their armies of lawyers and accountants, they can weather all the taxes and all the regulations. They can navigate it much more easily, and they pay the taxes and comply with a lot of the regulations grudgingly, but they know that at the same time they're would-be competitors and upstarts are having more trouble entering the market or being able to start a business. So that is a problem that I address by being pro-free enterprise and not pro-business or pro-established business per se. I have no socialist leanings or collectivist leanings. I do not want to put government control over any private companies. Be they big or small, they shouldn't be owned by government. The best thing the government could do is to protect – sorry, is to preserve and protect a free market economy. That should be the government's first economic duty, and it can't even do that right. So the federal government is just an out-of-whack, irreversible cesspool of corruption. If it did its constitutional duties, it would have about 95% less power than it has today. And they don't want to give up that power. They want to keep expanding it, even under Obama's fabulous stimulus. Apparently, they've hired more government employees. There's more government workers. So, and I knew the stimulus would be a failure. I even knew that you know, you can say this now, PK. Well, PK knew this before, that Obama would run into this problem a year or two down the line. Even black folks would start turning on this guy. I like seeing his own party turn on him, albeit for the wrong reasons. And as much as I don't trust the Republicans, at least they have fought tooth and nail and opposed pretty much everything he's tried to push through. And people say, well, Republicans won't work with them. You know, they're opposing everything. Well, you know, they should oppose everything he's – I mean, I oppose practically everything he's done. I don't think he's done anything right practically. It's not because he's a mulatto mixed-race person. It's because of his policies, although they'd like to frame it that way. A lot of his diehard supporters, oh, if you criticize Obama – you're racist. Oh, really? Well, you know, Obama remains clueless about economics, although recently maybe he woke up a little bit, unless it's just to be politically expedient. I mean, I guess this guy thinks if he actually wins in 2012, he'll again push for, you know, tax hikes. I want to detax everybody. That would give us – and I hate the term a level playing field, because equality is a revolt against nature. There's never going to be a level playing field. That's something – I think a phrase Reagan invented – should just be a free market where everybody does the best they can and can come and go, or there's no barriers to market entry. So I just continue on this show. I continue to mix economics, political science, history, philosophy. They're all mixed together. That's what you get when you listen to where I'm coming from. And I welcome anybody who cares to comment or contradict what I'm saying. I won't treat you like talk radio where they've got to go, or they just, you know, shut you down. That's not my style. I continue to go down this path of the third stream view, and I reject they always fall back on their accusations. Many will like to criticize. They use those tired terms of racism or anti-Semitism or unpatriotic. Well, I totally reject all that nonsense, because I uphold the great Western tradition of free inquiry. And I'm very big on revisionist history, objective intellectual revisionist history, which fills in a lot that the court historians have conveniently left out. And I've learned so much in the last year or two about U.S. history and even world history that it's turned my world upside down, and I just can't rally around a lot of this crap that they're trying to push on us. It's just laughable. So now I go through life thinking, what are they up to next? You know, you try to do the best you can and avoid the tentacles of government as much as possible. Doesn't mean there's no rules or no laws. You know, I believe in civility and law and order. It's just that there's too many laws and too many orders, and especially the drug war, which once you really study that, you see how deeply entwined it is into our system and how destructive it is. So I will always hammer away. I will hammer away at the drug war. I'll hammer away at foreign policy. I'll hammer away at war, not defense, but war. And I'll hammer away at taxes and, statism of all stripes. I'm opposed to more government control, more government ownership of private property, or government ownership of, be it sports facilities, airports, convention centers. I was surprised the government even owned a lot of that stuff, So that should all be sold off to the private sector and let it be managed by the private sector. And then if it can't make it or goes broke, competitors buy it, or it remains vacant till somebody buys it, foreign or domestic. And I welcome foreign investment in the States. If foreigners want to build a factory here or invest in our country, we should welcome that investment. They're putting money into our country. They're hiring Americans. I don't care if they run the companies, but they're going to hire more Americans, and we'll have a more friendly atmosphere for business. Investment is a very good thing. I guess an old rabbi once said that the investment is the most sincere form of charity, and I'll buy that. Because America is really only successful for two basic reasons early on. America started with small government and small taxes, which is a prescription for success basically in any country, even if it doesn't have natural resources or many of them, because it can import them, it can trade, it can grow just from that alone. So that is the direction I would like to see our country go back to: micro taxes and micro regulations. Well, folks, sounds like I'm starting to hear music here. We're coming to the end of this week's show. And I hope to have some other guests on in the future. We're going to be speaking about some controversial issues, especially Israeli lobby and Zionism, drug war, these sort of things. So it's always fun to speak to everybody. We'll see you back again every Monday here at bbsradio.com. Monday evenings, 9 p.m. Pacific, 12 midnight Eastern, 11 p.m. Central. Thanks again, everybody, and Happy New Year.
BBSRadio.com, the number one internet talk radio network on the planet. This is Spider Turner, and you can buy my music at CDBaby.com. Pick me up, check me out. Ah, yeah, BBSRadio.com. BBSradio.com. Engaging, powerful, unforgettable. This is BBS Radio. You've got Spider Turner. When I turn on my computer, it's the BBS, baby.
Hi, this is singer-songwriter Kara Johnstad in Berlin, Germany, and you're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
Hi, this is Marco May, and you're listening to my song Arabica from my album River of Soul. I would like to invite you to my website at marcome.com. You are now listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com, the number one internet radio network on the planet. Enjoy!
Called the Oprah of radio by her listeners, award-winning host Dr. Pat Vasili is blowing the doors off traditional talk radio. Get ready for powerful interviews with leaders in the field of human potential. Dr. Pat's perspective on living life full out has catapulted her show to the top of talk radio. Tune in, and Dr. Pat will help you thrive instead of merely survive. Listen to The Dr. Pat Show, Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Pacific on bbsradio.com and visit thedrpatshow.com.
This is singer-songwriter Robin Avery. It's a privilege to be on BBS Radio. You've been listening to music from my new release, The Way You Hold Me. Come visit me and check out the CD at robinavery.com.
On my own. Fact, I prefer to be alone. From these signs that you have shown,